I do not regret anything I've been through. Physically, mentally, being sexually abused, battered, beaten, my mum not being there, my dad not being there. Thank you. I've come from being homeless to being the best soldier of the 100 guys at this slot. This is meant for me. Now, 8 months ago, I was there ready to jump a cop. I had to bring me down because I get these thoughts. I struggle with happiness.
So welcome back to the Next Level podcast. On today's episode, we have David Smith, aka the Mindset Soldier. But before we go any further, I just want to give you guys a quick trigger warning, because we're going to be talking about sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, homelessness, PTSD, and some graphic details from the 8 years that David spent in the army. We're going to be discussing how David overcame his battle on the field and off the field, and what's really turned him into the person he is today, a true inspiration. Strap yourselves in, because it's been one of the most inspiring podcasts I've ever had to do. You needed to be the person you needed to be when you were a child. What does that mean to you?
What that means to me is, as we go through kind of our adult life, we need to try to change the person who we are. Because as a child, I think, well, personally, my story, I had fucking no one. Literally no one. There was no one there to teach me how to tie my shoelaces, how me how to shave, how me how to cook, how me how to be a fucking dad. That's the thing I'm struggling with, is to be a dad. And if I can build that person I am today, that's where I need to be.
What are you struggling with at the minute?
I've never had a father figure in my life. Never. Like, my stepdad's always been in and out my life and stuff like that. My dad disappeared and had another family from a young age. I did struggle, shall I say. Can I be a dad? Have I got that biological gene as my dad, where he's just a dickhead and just ran away kind of thing? And it's cemented to me as a person, as a human, as a man. Yeah, I fucking am. I'm the best dad to my kids. There's no shouting, there's no screaming. I come down to their level. I make sure they're emotionally intelligent. Do you know what I mean? Kids just absorb emotions. You can never teach a kid. You have to teach them through emotions. So if they're angry, I soothe. Not lash out or scream, kind of stuff like that. And I'm fucking learning about myself, mate. I'm changing my mindset again. So I'm proud of myself, what I'm doing. But we all fuck up, John. It's just a learning curve. My kids annoy me sometimes.
Again, I've got three as well, so yeah. It's very hard. So take me back to when you was younger, when you was, say, 5 years of age.
Yeah, so when I was around about 4 or 5 years old, my mum left my stepdad at the time and took me and my younger sister away. At the time, we thought everything was okay and stuff, but my mum had a drink problem. She was taking high medication for like spondylitis and stuff, so she was drinking heavily and on high medication. So she's abusing herself from both ends. And my life kind of went downhill from there, really. Mom started to neglect us, not in a bad way. Her intentions weren't to neglect us, but she had her own mental health problems and drug abuse and alcohol and stuff like that. And I think within about a year, social services got involved, because no one was there to pick us up from school. Our clothes were always dirty. We're always fed and loved, but my mum's neglect kind of came into place, and that's why social service got involved. And we both got took into care. And I think it was within about 6 months, my sister got took out of care, because we've all got different dads. So I was in the care system by myself. I just remember having a teddy, a black band, like a boombox and cassette tapes and shit like that. And I went to a place in Coventry called the Wisteria Lodge. And like back in the 80s and 90s, it was like quite renowned. Now at the time, it's been flattened for sex crimes and stuff. And that's where my childhood kind of stopped. So it's where I went through like sexual abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, kids making me do stuff that I didn't want to do, because we were cross ages. So I was like 5, 6 and they were 18, 19. And then you had staff that didn't really give a fuck, or turned a blind eye, or it was too much paperwork for them and stuff. And you try and ask for help, and you're always pushed aside, saying, you're just an angry kid, no one likes you, no one loves you, your parents don't like you, kind of things like that. So it's kind of pushed under the carpet. A lot of times I tried to tell people, especially in the school system and stuff like that, and it was always, I was the naughty kid. Of course I'm going to be fucking naughty. I'm being abused. You're not listening to me. I'm shouting out in emotion and crying and stuff like that. You're not listening to my emotions. Do you know what I mean? Kids can't be articulate in certain ways and stuff. So that damaged me definitely as a kid.
So you mentioned the types of abuse you've been through.
Yeah.
Can you sort of share any more on that for anyone that can potentially be going through that now, and how you overcame that at such a young age?
I won't even say overcome it. I don't think we get over anything in life. We just learn how to deal with it and use coping mechanisms.
Mm.
We don't forget anything, especially our sympathetic nervous system and stuff like that, and how we actually approach stuff. We never forget it. We just deal with it and how we can actually move forward from it. If you're going through it, if you're a child, I don't know if you're ever going to listen to this, even if you're a teenager and whatever, you need to speak to the people that actually care about you, because telling people that actually don't really give a fuck is maybe your social worker or a parent that doesn't really, you don't really get on with, you're going to push it onto deaf ears. If you've got friends and family that you can speak to, then speak out. There's obviously helplines and stuff, but you will get fucking through it. Just never give in and never give up. We're all energy. Energy can't be destroyed. And that thing that's helped me through life is I will never be fucking destroyed. We'll always go onto different platforms and stuff, but I can't be. I'm still here, do you know what I mean? So whatever you're going through life, it just strengthens you kind of in a way.
And obviously that leads me nice onto your mindset. But before we go on to that, you've touched on obviously the Wisteria Lodge, which I knew because obviously I've listened to a previous podcast.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Which, for anyone that's listening, it's disturbing. But it's made you into the person you are today.
Oh, massively.
So there's a massive lesson to learn from that.
Yeah.
That although you've had a horrible experience, undoubtedly, it's made you into this soldier.
Oh, 100%. I was a soldier before I was a soldier kind of thing. I had to be,
Yeah, and you can tell that the determination was there before you even knew it.
Because
you didn't have a choice. It's very hard for people to understand that.
Yeah.
That haven't been through that and walked your path.
Mm.
Because before that, people that haven't walked your path, or say mine or anyone else's, it's a different path, but you did not have a choice because of the experiences you had in your home life.
Yeah.
Can you relate to what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100% I can too. 100%. It gives me like goosebumps just thinking about it, because I know I haven't dealt with it. I'm never going to deal with it.
No.
It still hurts me to the point where now I have kids, I'm just like, how the fuck can someone do that to a child? My kid's only like two, but it happened to be when I was like 5 or 6. It's weird now, like even when I'm with my kids and stuff, I black out sometimes and think, how the fuck can someone do that to a child? Like, and sometimes like I black out and like someone says to me, like, you're right. Like, I'm just like, yes, sir. Like, it baffles me in a way. Like, it just, yeah.
Did you find it hard to trust, love, engage, interact?
Yeah, I never had love. Like, my mum loved me. My mum was Italian. She was fiery, like, we were always fed. Like, if someone hurt her, she'd be the first one there. Like, that kind of mentality. And my mum was an amazing woman, but she had her own demons, and I haven't trusted anyone fucking hell. I don't really trust anyone. I don't think you can fully trust people. The moment you give someone your happiness, it can give you a sadness kind of thing. So I try not to do that quite a lot. Like, I give my kids 100%. I won't give another human 100%. I just won't.
What about in relationships? How has that impacted your relationships?
Fuck it. I'm terrible in relationships, because I get in a relationship, it gets really, really, really good. Yeah, fuck it. I'll self-sabotage. Don't like it. It's weird. Someone saying they love me or they care for me or they want the best for me. No, you're fucking lying. You're not telling the truth. And that's my chimp paradox kind of thing in my back of my mind, in the back, just yelling. I do try and override it sometimes and just breathe, be present. Try and take that big, deep breath. I'm good. I've got gratitude. What am I happy for? Little things. I got here safe, like stuff like that. I'm happy. I find it very hard to trust people.
Do our coping mechanisms then not become our triggers?
100%. 100%. Because it brings on that kind of chemical kind of imbalance, or what you're going to say, and it's fight or flight kind of thing. And it's helped me in certain situations, but then I think it's debilitated me in certain situations where I still fuck up my relationships. I've never had a good relationship. And my previous one was because of my fuck up. Do you know what I mean? It's hard.
What did you do?
I cheated. Do you know what I mean? Because I think I'm constantly seeking dopamine hits constantly from, if something isn't going right, what can I do? Can I chase? Because I've got ADHD and like an emotional imbalance disorder. So it's hard for me to, I don't see sex as just sex. A relationship to me, I don't know what a relationship is. So if there's not sex involved, if there's not that like love language between me and stuff like that, I just kind of self-sabotage in a way. I take full responsibility of what I've done. I don't care what people's opinions are. I fuck up, you fuck up. If you judge me, not people will judge you kind of thing. But it's just one of the things that I think I dealt with it very well because it got blew up huge because my social media presence and stuff like that, which I had to protect my kids. I had to protect something. So I didn't react to it. Just let it go.
Do you think there's an element of wanting validation and seeking that validation that's never going to come?
Yeah. I think that we all do, right? Do you know what I mean? We're constantly on that train of jump on, jump off, quit the doors closed, jump on, jump off kind of thing. It fucks us up in the long run, I think, because what I try and do is try and do now, learning from that experience is, right, there's two ways. It's either pleasure or purpose. Same with social media. Am I posting for pleasure or purpose? Am I posting for likes, algorithms, or just trying to be liked by other people or actually trying to help people? Once I've got in my rhythm of, if I can just help people with a post, that's all that matters, isn't it? A lot of stuff like that.
Who do you think you're seeking the validation from?
I don't have a fucking clue. I've got no one to seek validation from, bro. Do you know what I mean? I think it's for myself to prove to people and myself that I can do it, like yourself from your upbringing and my upbringing. Like, it's that, what's the word I'm looking for? Imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I shouldn't really be living in this house. Like, I shouldn't really be having these nice cars. I shouldn't really have 6 figures in my bank account and shit like that. You get like, actually, you know what? I do. And I deserve more. And I will be a multimillionaire. And I will have this and that. And it's just trying to re-step your mind into thinking you are good enough. It's hard. It's like 34 years of people telling me I'm fucking nothing. But they're the people that are nothing now. Do you know what I mean? The people that have had good upbringings that have been around and stuff like that, they've not amounted to anything.
I can 100% agree with you on that. I was, for years, trying to seek that validation from my dad. Because I've put him on a pedestal. I've said this in other podcasts. Me and my mum were this, you couldn't break the bond. And then I was just constantly, doesn't matter what she done for me, it was, I was seeking validation from her, from him. Never got it. Didn't want me. Just was like, meh.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with me. And I could win competitions. I could do whatever.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't there. And it was only recently, I would say, and in everything that I'd done, I just went, light bulb moment.
And it was
my kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just went, what the fuck? Well, how can you even do anything like what he'd done, similar to you?
Yeah.
It amazed me. It absolutely amazes me. And it won't be the same for everyone if they have kids. It won't be that catalyst moment.
Yeah.
But it could be something that just triggers you and you go, actually, you will have the moment. You can't put a time frame on it, but it will happen.
You just need to be conscious with it as well. That's a big thing.
And also, you've got to allow yourself time, space for it to happen. But most important thing that I've recognised on this journey and my own, and for every single person that I've spoke with on the podcast, is that we are normal.
There
is, like, that's why I call it next level, is everyone is going to that next level. It doesn't matter what that is. And the ability to actually sort of cure ourselves.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Do you know what I mean?
I think you're failing if you do that.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
There's no ceiling to where we can go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you're curing yourself,
yeah, yeah.
Do you really want to?
Nah, do you fuck?
You don't really want to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when I looked at things that way. Actually, no, I don't.
Yeah.
I want to keep pushing through boundaries.
Yeah.
I want to get to that next level. Well, that next level for everyone is different.
Do you still seek that from your father now, or
no?
No.
No, because I'm happy with myself. Whereas before, I was trying to prove things to him, trying to prove it to others.
Yeah.
Literally everyone around me.
Yeah.
Because I thought it would get to him through others.
Does that make sense? So, yeah, I get you. Secondary validation kind of thing.
Yeah. But now I know I can give a shit.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Like, that's why you say you're so calm, you're chilled.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm doing it for myself, for you. There's a bigger reason I'm doing this. Because there's people out there that will listen to your story. And it's going to impact a lot more people. Plus, we've met.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it don't even have to go out to YouTube or wherever it's going to go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a conversation.
Just a conversation, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So talk to me about your teenage years, like 14 to 19. What happened to, what happened in that period?
So coming, I was like, I had multiple foster homes, temporary fostered or moved around quite a lot. I started to get contact with my mum again. We were on and off. So before my teenage years, it was like every 2 weeks you get to see her. You get a phone call every Tuesday night at 6 o'clock. And then my mum did rehabilitation, got a drink under control. She seemed a lot better from the outside to people. I think she faked it quite well in certain parts. I went to an all boys school, which probably wasn't the best environment. Do you know what I mean? I was constantly fighting. Every day was fighting, but I think that's good for a lad personally, is having that alpha mentality. But you don't go to school thinking, fucking, I've got to fight again. Do you know what I mean? It's supposed to be about learning. I was always in detention. But through my childhood and my teenage years, I always had someone there to help me with my anger. I had a support teacher from when I started like nursery to primary school to secondary school. Even in like primary school, I was never allowed out on the playground because I was too aggressive. So it was always me watching kids play. I was inside with a fucking middle-aged guy baking cakes.
Do you feel that the school system, just like you touched on now, I can resonate with that quite a lot. If you come from a certain background, you've been sort of marked. You've got your card marked already. Especially in your situation. And I can certainly, like I say, resonate. And you're sitting there watching other kids play. It doesn't matter what fucking, whatever you do, it doesn't matter how well you've behaved or whatever it is. You're done.
I'm saying it pulled out. If there's something going wrong, it's always they point.
Even if it's not your fault.
Yeah, 100%.
You get blamed. It's easier to blame.
All the time, mate. And like, even like parents even and stuff like that. Like, I remember one of my mates at school, his name was Matthew Early. His parents, we had like an altercation, me and this kid, and fighting, whatever. And she said to her, you need to be so naughty. This is why your parents don't love you. That'll always stick in my brain. Do you know what I mean? A mother telling a six-year-old kid, like parents even, that. How can I, like, I shouldn't really need to remember that. But that stuck with me, like, to my parents that love me, like, and stuff like that, like, from that age. And, like, another person to even say that, another fucking mother. Do you know what I mean? It shows what kind of mother you are now, do you know what I mean? But it's mad, like, little stuff like that stick in my head. I don't really have any peaceful things as a child. Seeing my mum battered, like, being raped and stuff like that, and going through all of that, I don't really have a happy memory at all. Like, I don't even open presents because I never had a good Christmas or a birthday. I just don't open presents. Give me a present, I'll open it in my own time in my bedroom. Kind of stuff like that.
Was there a lot of judgment
from
everyone?
Possibly. I think it was a lot more. I thought people were judging me a lot more, and probably I pushed away a lot of people when they weren't judging me. Which you know, do you know what I mean? It's that fight or flight. But everyone's going to judge you. You're the naughty kid, the kid that has no parents, your mum's an alcoholic, your dad was never there, your siblings are here, there and everywhere and stuff. And it's just, I never had anyone to turn to. That's why my bedroom or my car is my safe place. Anywhere I can close a door and no one can enter, that's my safe. That's why I do my videos in my car. Or I have my own room in my house, my bedroom. I'll close the door. That's a safe space for me.
I think it's important for people to recognise what you just said there. This person you are on social media, this influential person that you are, that you still revert back to your safe place.
100%, you need it.
That stems from when you was a child. It's so important for people to recognise that they can be going through all the shit that they're going through, but you've still got yours.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
100%, it's okay to have your safe space.
It's really important for that. And I've got mine.
What's yours?
Gym,
yeah.
As you probably see by
the
rest of the stuff. And here.
Yeah.
And a podcast. I've said it so many times, this is my therapy.
Yeah.
And it's because I've been through, I would say all of them.
yeah,
all of different types of therapy, and I can't relate to anyone apart from when I went. Rehab was one, and when I come out of rehab was probably the only one, and art therapy.
Yeah. Is that because you were around people with the same, or was it?
No, it's because it was the type of bloke that I was actually talking to.
Okay, perfect, yeah. Which is, you need, it's the relationship with the person on the other side that's supposed to be helping.
Exactly what you said at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the only time, but even then, you question their agenda.
Yeah.
But when you have these conversations, it's so much easier, I feel. But also, which is something else that you haven't mentioned, using 15 to 20 different placements. Wasn't just one, was it?
No, it was numerous, mate. Like temporary foster places, I think, put off 15, 20. Then I had permanent places, which was never permanent. Mm. Because I think back in the day, a lot of people took on different kids. Like I was always like, say if I was in a household, it was me. Then there was like two other different kids in permanent. Mm. It can't really, I don't think it can really work like that because we've all got our own needs.
Mm.
The more like you say, you've got three kids. I think the more kids you have, this might be different for you. I think the more kids you have, the more diluted the attention is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've got two kids. That's all I want because they can get 100% of me. Do you know what I mean? They won't always get 100% of it. It's 99%. I think more than that. So when you're in the care system, you've got multiple kids with multiple fucking problems. It's just a disaster. Like we'd always beat each other up or all kinds of stuff like that. It was just, it's another shit environment to a shit environment. Then moving from that into hostels where there was no temporary foster parents because they couldn't take me on because I wasn't allowed in any school in the Coventry in the West Midlands. I wasn't allowed in any because they didn't have the right structure for me to have this person that helped me. So it was like one school, which was the Woodland School. It was either that or I'd have to go to like Birmingham. So going through that, I was always picked on through secondary school because I had someone there constantly with me. So I was always, it seems like the stupid kid and shit like that. I'd just lash out and bang people. People used to bully me because I was short and fat and a bald head. Looked like fucking Uncle Fester. Do you know what I mean? You're tall. Do you know what I mean? But I had that like, fuck this. Like people used to try and like, I used to get bullied then that. I didn't turn into a bully. I just ended up, whatever, bam. And known for that mentality, like I just wouldn't give a shit.
Mm.
Like the school journey, I spoke to with my mate on my other podcast actually, like we had a school bus and it was literally like just full of lads. At the end of the day, you get on, you had to try and make it to the back and it was just, you get pommeled, battered every day. But I think it's good for a lad. Now lads just sit on a fucking phone to look at the screen.
Mm.
Everyone's down, do you know what I mean? They haven't got that fight or flight mentality and they just end up stabbing people because they don't know what to do. And that's a massive thing in Coventry is knife crime. Do you know what I mean?
And then you converted to Islam.
Yeah, at 16, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, tell me what happened there.
I needed something, bro. I needed something I didn't know I needed. I was drug dealing at the time, trying to make ends meet. I had no job, I was living at my stepdad's at the time. So I was going through college. Like I had to try and get money myself. So I started ending up drug dealing and getting into gangs and stuff like that, trying to make money as quick as possible.
Mm.
Which I don't know, it's obviously not good, but we have to do what you have to do. And my mate at the time who I was dealing with, he was Muslim, but he went to go and seek his deen, which is like obviously a spiritual journey in Islam. And he said, just come to the mosque with me. I was like, oh, no, fuck that, it's bullshit. Like, I ain't going to the mosque. Went with him once, spoke to one of the mullahs there. Had a conversation like about family, this and kind of stuff like that. He said, just come along to like one of the Jummas, which is a Friday prayer. Everyone comes along. It just felt like family, bro. It's weird. I think it was my first look at, I can trust someone because they only ever wanted me to be happy. They were just like, in your own time, just come and speak to us. They let me go around theirs for food. They're like, they'd ring me at night. When they didn't need to, how's things going? You okay? Do you need any food? Do you want to go out? I was like, what the fuck do these want? Like, what are they trying to do to me kind of thing? And it kind of went from there. I started to learn Arabic. I recite in Arabic now. I can still speak in Arabic. I went to the main mosque in Leicester. I used to spend weekends there, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, literally just praying on my beads, speaking, learning Arabic, trying to repent my sins in a way. But because I was fresh and then I converted, it's like you just knew. So I had no sins to carry on, kind of thing, because I didn't know before. And this is a mad story, to be fair. So when I converted to Islam, I spoke to one of the mullahs there, Hafiz Suleiman, his name was, and he wanted me to meet another white Muslim. His name was Dawood, my name was Dawood in Arabic, that means David. And he was just like, how do your parents feel and stuff like that? I said, it's a bit awkward, like I don't speak to my dad and my mum. Literally live around the corner from the mosque. I didn't see her for 6 months because she came quite volatile again. So I didn't see her for 6 months. So she literally lives around the corner. I said, I don't think it's the right time to go and see her. He said, look, you need to go and see her as soon as possible. Something just doesn't feel right. Didn't really take notice of it. 2 days, she just dropped dead. Night out of the blue, like, I remember the knock on the door. I was watching Footballer's Wives at the time. I'll always remember it now for that reason. Just a knock on the door, and I heard from the top of the stairs. I was living at my stepdad's at the time, and just a knock on the door, you know, the police knock. Mm-hmm. He was like, it's David Smith. I was like, fuck, what are we doing? Like, they caught something, what they're doing. He's like, we've got some bad news about Maria Smith. I just sunk, and she's like, can we come in? He says, he's upstairs, and I just overheard the conversation. She's like, she's passed away. We've just come to pass on it. I just sunk, bro. So I didn't know how to take that information in. Like, and ended up, my stepdad at the time, he's very emotional and intelligent. He's one of the back eras. But you don't know what you don't know. Like, he's a very man's man. He's an amazing man. He said, David. I said, I heard. He said, you all right? Just silent, and just put my shoes on. I ended up running all the way to her house, which is fucking longest I've ever run in my life. Like, it's about 6-7 miles. Literally ran from one end of the country to the other. I just didn't believe it, knocking on the door, looking for the letterbox, and just fucking broke down. I was just like, I just couldn't comprehend it. Like, the mix of emotions was just like, and I think that's why grief's so powerful. It teaches us an emotion that we do love and we are human. But that fucking broke me, man. Like, yeah.
Is there anything that you want to say to your mum now?
Yeah, is it my bit? Yeah. You fucking bastard. yeah. She's just an amazing woman. I should. I hope. I just forgive her. I forgive myself and I forgive her. Yeah, you're a bastard for jumping. Yeah, I remember that photo, man.
I thought you might.
Yeah. She's just an amazing woman, bro. Do you know what I mean? She's taught me so much. She taught me how to be a man because my dad was never there. Mm. I don't see that now. I didn't see that then, sorry. I see it now. Like, she had to be the protector. She had to show me fucking anger. She had to show me adrenaline. She had to show me love. She had to show me peace. She had to show me everything a woman shouldn't need to show. Do you know what I mean? So I just thank you just for being her, really. But yeah.
Powerful, mate.
Yeah, yeah. It's sad. It's one of them, like, she died of a heart attack, do you know what I mean? But she'd written a diary, bro, like 2 weeks before she passed away. My heart, I remember seeing it, my heart's aching, I want to see my son. I feel like my heart's being ripped out, and she died of a heart attack, and it's just like, do you know what I mean? You put two and two together, she just died of a broken heart in a way, like, you try and kind of thing, but it's one of them.
She'd be proud, mate, for what you've achieved.
Hopefully, bro, yeah, hopefully.
She'd be proud of the amount of people that you can touch now.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that you're going to be helping. What happened next?
I just wanted a bit of a spiral again. I went to go and see the mullah about it. And he was just like, this is Allah testing you in a way to see if you're right in the deen. And because shaitan comes in different ways, which is the devil. It can come in substances. It can come in family. It can come in friends. And that's all about trying to see if you're on the right path. I just couldn't comprehend that at 16. I was just like, this is not right. He's took away my mom. He said, it's just a test. You need to stay strong with your faith. I was like, fuck this. Like, and just went in a bit of a downward spiral. Got into taking drugs again, drinking. Left my stepdad's at the time because he couldn't handle how I was at the time. He got in a bit of a vacation. He ended up fucking hitting me. I was just like, this is my point proving, because I used to batter my mum when I was a kid and stuff like that. I've seen that, him drag my mum upstairs and batter her and stuff like that. And it was just, you know, I thought this. So, went into hostels, had to register myself as homeless. Got into some hostels in Coventry. They were just shit, just full of drug abusers and kind of that environment. So I ended up living on the streets, living in hostels, and it was just back and forth for a couple of years. My family don't know that I used to live on the streets properly. About two, 3 days I was living on the streets, and I'd get a hostel in here and there and trying to find food. Trying not to beg, because I didn't want people to see me like begging for food, because I knew a lot of people in Coventry, and it was just quite embarrassing. Do you know what I mean? So you'd wait for people to finish a dinner or grab something from KFC when people were, stuff like that. And there was a place in Coventry called the Foyer. So I could get a registered address, because I couldn't join the military before that, because I didn't have a, I tried to join and they said, you can't join, but you haven't got an address. Like, I was like, so I went to the foyer, did that. And then joined the military at 19, bro. That just fucking changed my life, really. There was no plan B or C. It was join the military or go to prison or do something.
Okay. Tell me more about the military.
The military saved my life in a way. It gave me purpurse again. So on the 25th of January 2009 was my first day in the military. I joined before that, but then you have to wait, get enlisted. I remember the train journey up to Catterick, getting off there with a baggy suit, shit tie. You look like a fucking paedophile, bro. Like, I was like, what the fuck do I look like? Like, my shoes don't match, everything. I look like a weirdo at a train station looking for people, bro. So, but then you're like, you meet everyone else, you're like, oh, fucking hell, you fit in, because we're all wearing shit, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You felt that little bit of relatability. Got on the coach, met the sergeants at the time, I remember them. It was just mad. It was emotions, like, you want to giggle, but then fucking hell, they're shouting at us, like, you, that mentality. But I was just super focused, bro. I was like, yo, this... I need to make this happen. I need to, like, out of 100 guys, I need to make this happen. I cannot go home, because I haven't got to go home to go to. I can't go back to being homeless or trying to do something. So training started, thrived off it, bro. And people's perception of life kind of delved into me then. When we're going on exercise, living in like shell scrapers and going on exercise for a week, living under fucking a poncho, and people were moaning, bro. I was just like, yo, you don't know how lucky you are. Like, I was living on the street 6 months ago, I had no food. Now I'm getting fed 3 times a day and I'm getting paid like £600 a month, which is nothing. But that was what you were getting at the time. I was like, you guys are fucking mad. I was like, I had just a super focused kind of thing, and ended up going through training. Got best recruit out of like 100 lads. And I was like, this is mad. Like, I've come from being homeless to being the best soldier of the 100 guys at this slot. Like, this is meant for me. But just before my pass out, I think it was about 9 weeks before I was supposed to pass out, I got a phone call that my dad died, and I thought it was my stepdad. I was like, fucking hell, like, and rang my sister at the time. She went, no, like, your real dad. I was like, I don't know my real dad. Like, I didn't know how to fucking take it again. Like, and I had... The sergeant at the time gave me it wasn't an ultimatum, it was, if you go and sort your dad's funeral out and leave right now, you're going to be back squatted. I was like, nah, I'm not doing that. Like, I can't, I don't know him. I don't know how I feel about the situation. So I had to bottle that up again. I had to put that in a suitcase, put it away. Them feelings and emotion of like who he was kind of thing. But that was a struggle, I think. At the end of my training, finding out who he was, because I found it first time I ever saw a picture of him, really. I went out to go to his house in Coventry, and it's fucking weird, because he does look like me, and he's just, I don't know, like, it's weird. Did your dad look like you? Like,
yeah, exactly, yeah,
exactly like you. Same. I've never had that. Like, I've never, like, fucking hell, he just looked like me. Like, I'm glad. I'm like, looked at the fat, I was like, glad he ain't bald.
mine is.
Exactly. I just had that thing, and the weekend that was off from training, where we had to go back, we were allowed like a weekend off. I come back, and he actually ripped me a letter, which is weird. So he put me in his will, 100%, and that's when I found out I got a half sister. I've never met him, never met her yet. She had the chance to reach out, but I couldn't reach out to her and the solicitors. I don't know how it worked. And I was just like, whatever, I won't chase it. But he used to come and watch me play basketball most nights in Coventry. Like, there's a far Gosford Street, and there's like a basketball place. I used to play like nearly semi-pro before joining the military. And he used to come and watch me most evenings. I was there like every night. And he said that he used to come and watch me play basketball. We just never had, never had it in him to come and speak to me, to have that open conversation. But even that's just fucking mad. Like, he used to come and watch me play basketball. I didn't even know my dad was 10 foot away from me.
How does it make you feel now?
I think he's quite pathetic. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he's a man. Like, you fucked up, deal with it, approach the situation and have the consequences after. We could have had a great relationship. I could have told you to fuck off. But he chose not to do that. And he's gone to the other realm or whatever you're saying with that guilt. It's not my problem, bro. Do you know what I mean? I'm not dealing with your guilt. You're not passing that on to me. I'm not passing my trauma onto my kids. Like, I'm not letting you pass your trauma onto me. You deal with it.
That was going to be my next question. Do you think you've suppressed and bottled it up, and that's potentially why you are the way you are now?
Definitely. I think like yourself, what we go through in life makes us. I do not regret anything I've been through. Physically, mentally, being sexually abused, battered, beaten, my mum not being there, my dad not being there. Thank you. Thank you for doing that to me.
I can't remember what arm it's on, but I've got that pretty much there. I can't remember what it says. Live up and regret.
That's it, yeah. Exactly. That's the way you need to live it. Like, I don't know. I've just come to that point. I think it's my 30s, bro. I did a video about it. It's a fuck you moment. Mm. Like, and I think the 30s are the powerful years for me. So I just don't give a fuck what people think. Like, you live with that regret, whatever. Like, I just can't hold on to other people's guilt. I've got too much of my own, bro, to deal with, to pass it on. So it's definitely made me into the person I am. Am I proud of the person I am? Kind of. I still fuck up, but I'm still learning.
Yeah, who doesn't though, to be honest?
Exactly, yeah.
Everyone does every day. Take me back to, obviously, the military. You've joined.
Yeah.
So what happened next?
So joined in 2009. Passed out in August, and I was in Afghan 2 months later as a battle casualty replacement. I was on St. James's Palace doing the Queen's Guard, because I was in the Grenadier Guard. So we're twice a soldier, if you want to put it that way. We guard the Queen with the Queen's personal bodyguards, and also we're infantry first. There's no other regiment in the world that does what the Grenadier Guards and the Guards do. And I put my hand up. I remember coming up from St. James's Palace, coming off guard, coming off sentry, and the company sergeant major at the time, OH, he was just like, we need some casualty replacements. Bam, yeah, I'm there, sound. And went out to my first tour of Afghan. That was just mad. Meeting the guys and trying to fit in. I was in the incoming company, which was the best company for me, because they were just full of dickheads. Literally, you just relate straight away. Like, we had that mentality, the laughter, the banter, not really giving a fuck. It was the company in the battalion that, if you weren't really liked, you were passed on to this company. So it just fit me perfect, bro. But yeah, it was just mad. And I remember my first contact, shits and giggles again. Like, you just laugh. I remember that coach feeling where you don't have to laugh or cry. Like, what's going on?
How did you deal with being in an environment with other guys, considering the upbringing that you had?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you've been in the foster placements.
Yeah.
How did you deal with being in that environment with other guys?
Some of them were just as fucked up as me.
But yeah, I thought that might be the case.
And do you know what I mean? They all come from broken, 99% of the military come from broken homes, unless you're an officer. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You come from a broken home, you've already got that mentality. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So it's an instant emotional click when you don't really know, but you just click.
And what about the authority? How did you deal with that?
At the start, absolutely sound. Absolutely fine. But there was always a voice inside me that if something isn't right, nah, I'll speak up. And I was always known for that. I was always known as a green soldier. I was always known, you can always come to me. I'll do anything you say. But if I don't think it's politically or emotionally correct, why are we doing this? like stuff like that was coming out in like Afghan when we were going on missions and stuff. People were getting people to do stuff that you wouldn't do. Like, no, we're not doing that kind of thing. To a certain point, I respect authority if it's given in the right way, not as a bully mentality. If you're going to try and bully me, I'll straight up just knock you out. I'll straight up fight. I don't care who you are, what rank you are. I was known for that. Not in a good way, but I just wouldn't take shit. Speak to me and I'll get that job done. No matter what means. But if you try and speak to me like a dickhead, no, it's not happening, mate. And that's why a lot of our ranks in the military had a lot of respect, is because they would do it before you. They'd speak to you in a good manner, but you respected them. But then you get dickheads like you do in any industry that just speak to you like shit. Yeah. You ain't going to work for them. Do you know what I mean?
And obviously you've dealt with a lot of shit in the military.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, talk to me about it.
So my first tour was quite kinetic. That was a winter tour, so it was quite kinetic, but that was the first time I've ever seen someone kind of blown up or shot. It was kind of like, wow, like I had to grow up. I'm 19, man. Like, I went from being no childhood, teenager, bam, adult, straight away kind of thing. And that mentality of seeing someone blown up in pain. And the training just kicks in. It's hard to see that, but I think it makes you into a man, because you see him from different perspectives. And it was hard seeing your friends shot and blown up, but we're there for a reason. Do you know what I mean?
What emotions are going through your head then?
It's just hard, like, because they're not here no more. Do you know what I mean? It's pain, suffering, anguish. Really, was it worth it? Because most of the ground that we took over and tried to give to the Afghan army and the police, it's just been fucked off now. They've got it back. Do you know all the stuff? Like the last year when it was coming about and all on TV, like they've took fucking nearly 80-90% back of the ground. It's like, what the fuck were we there for? But we all know it's all political government bullshit. Do you know what I mean? But I'm not there for the government. I'm there for the guy left and right of me. Do you know what I mean? That's what it's about.
Talk to me about John Dawson.
Yeah, a really good mate of mine, Pudding, we call him, because he's a fat little shit. But yeah, so he was in training with me, actually. Amazing lad. Just wasn't the most switched on at some points. Like, a great soldier, but sometimes he'd just forget shit, like, random as fuck. But I think I was more like his soldier dad, really, because I'd bully him just so he'd get his shit right, but I wouldn't allow anyone else to fucking bully him. Do you know what I mean? So we're on our second tour in Afghan in 2012. I was a Lance Corporal and a physical training instructor at the time. Went out on tour. I was a 2IC to my section. And that was the most kinetic tour I think the battalion seen. We had 5 deaths. And we had over nearly 100 injuries in that tour, from anything from people being blown up, shot, shrapnel, broken bones, all kind of IEDs, explosions and stuff. And it was literally from the get-go. I can't really describe it in a way, like, the part of Afghan when we was the worst square mile in the world for deaths and connectivity. It was just mad, like, Afghan's a beautiful place, but there was like a green zone. As soon as you stepped over that, bro, you're getting UGL, like, underslung grenade launchers, you're getting peppered with fucking artillery, shot at. I fucking loved it, bro. It's just the madness and the chaos. I absolutely thrived off it. Like, I'd never take a knee being shot at. I'd be that person, like, ask anyone who I served with that this wasn't me. If it was my time, it's my time. I'm here to protect and kill, kind of thing. And that was later on in the tour, so it was my... I think I come back off R&R. Was it I come back off an R&R? I think it was just before I went on R&R. We'll be doing something called baiting ops. So we'll go out, kind of fish the enemy out to be seen, so we could be shot at, so we could do card alpha, so we could return fire. Because you can't just shoot the enemy if they had no presence of, like, them giving us a threat. So the atmosphere just literally just changed when we were going through these compounds, and it just... like the locals were running at us like, fucking don't go that way, but you knew something was going to come up, so you knew the Taliban was in the area. We got to the compound, went into one of these compounds, searched the compound, took it over for about a couple of hours to try and get our coordinates properly and our plan together. So we were going to different compounds, checking, and there was this one compound, which was the mosque. And went to go and search it, and the mullah at the time that was out there would not allow us in there. Just wouldn't allow us. And the officer at the time was just like, we can't go in there. It's disrespectful. I said, no, look, we need to go in there. Like, I'll speak to them and this and that. You take off your shoes and stuff like that. They just wouldn't allow us in it. And the officer was just, he was being more hearts and minds for the locals than us. Just something wasn't right. So we went back, took over another compound, instantly got ambushed. We were getting shot at from different coordinates. So me, John Dawson and Ali Engum went out and gave a sentry. Ali Engum was at the, I think he was on the left corner because he had the LMG, which is like a small machine gun. So we could give kind of rapid fire. We're moving out. John Dawson come out. He started giving him fire. He had a hard cock, which was one of the rounds got stuck in the chamber. He started to take his weapon system apart while he was in a fucking firefight, bro. Like, guy's a fucking idiot, bro. So I had to come out. I had to come out, like, what the fuck are you doing? Grabbed his weapon system. I said, get down, got him into cover. Started to put the weapon system together for him so he could clean, like, the barrel, because he cleaned it out. There was a jam. Put it back together. And I remember, I got his weapon system. Just, you do, like, you check the weapon system, bam, bam, cock it, pull it back. A round came out the chamber. And I remember catching the fucking round. And I put it in my top left. And I remember putting it there. Gave him his weapon system back. It died down, went back into the compound. And we got a route from Sergeant Shepherd. So we went to the route, took over another compound. And that's where we stayed for the foreseeable future. Trying to find out when we can push out to try and find the enemy. Put out the sentries. Then it was me and the sharpshooter, John Outwood, on top of the compound. And we were just trying to bait them. We were walking around in circles. Never say stationary because you're going to get shot and probably killed. So we're walking around. 45 minutes went past. An hour went past. It's fucking 45 degree heat. So we changed over. I shut it down to the platoon commander. Like, change over sentries. John Dawson came up on Ali Engum. John Dawson took over my position. He took over outwards. Gave Dawson coordinates. There's the mosque, blah, blah, this and that. Just little bits, like, if there's people moving about. I said, look, there was a little rivet, so it was flat. And I remember there was, like, a solar panel. And then there was little divots like that on top of the roof. It stops, like, say, if water gets down there, if they can drain it off properly. I said, if you sit down, have a drink, make sure you, like, you fucking sit in these divots. Literally, I've got down off the building, took my off-spray off, helmet, put my rifle down. I had nothing on, just my shoes. I had my flip-flops, actually. Put my flip-flops on, my trousers. I just heard the round. You just hear it. I was like, fuck, like, where's that? Engum shouting, man down. I just couldn't see Dawson. I was like, fuck, where's that come from? You could tell. When you hear a round, you know exactly where it comes from. You can see it. So I looked up, couldn't see any shadows. Pulled further back, couldn't see anything. Seen Engum, he just had shell shock, bro. He was just, couldn't get a word out of him. It's like, fuck. Just got on top of the building. Got on top of there. I was getting pummeled with fucking rounds by some fucking Taliban. Tried to see where Dawson was. Looked over. Seen Dawson. Engum. I was like, Engum, get the fuck down. Grabbed him. Got on top of the building. Ran over to Dawson. I couldn't see any exit or entry wounds of nothing. He was just out cold. Couldn't get anything from me trying to speak to him. It's like, fuck. But then there was fire. Loads of rounds coming in. Hitting the solar panel, so I've moved like the solar. I've moved in front of the solar panel to try and get the rounds to stop hitting us. And then got on top of Dawson, seen the wound because I tilted his head, and then I seen the wound from the bottom of his. I think it was his left jaw, and it's just obviously ricocheted and come out the top of his head. So instantly, there's nothing really you can do there. All I could do from him was drain the blood from his mouth because it was like he was choking on his blood and his tongue and stuff like that. Sit with his bed, put in the recovery position, tried to take over the firefight. So I was literally on top of him, like over knee, while he was draining his blood. I took the GPMG up, which is like a heavy machine gun, got that, tried to fucking fire, hard cock. I was like, fucking, this ain't my fucking day, bro. Fuck that off, grabbed the rifle, hard cock that, bam, started pommering him, hard cock again. I was like, fucking hell. I'm literally going to die now. So I had to revert my attention to Dawson and was like, right, guys, to try and take over the firefight. There's the coordinates. Got on top of Dawson again and just hunked over him while the rounds were coming in and just gradually trying to drag him and drag him because he was quite heavy with the off spray and stuff like that, a dead weight. Like, with the kit on, he probably weighed about 110, 120k. Dragging him over, took him over to the medic, got him down the ladder. So I was underneath his like armpits, trying to keep his head back. As he was coming down, I'll always remember my mate, Charlie Leonard was at the bottom, and I've tilted in John Dawson's face, just went like that. And all of his blood just dropped down into my mate's mouth. And he was just like, trying to literally puke and that. Got him down off the building. The medic took over, started giving him first aid and doing a sit rep to get the helis in to get him out. I took over the firefight again, got on top of the cop of the building, and literally I just got the rocket launcher, bro. I was like, fuck this needs to end. Got that, got the rocket launcher, pummeled it at number 66, hit the moss straight away. The fire went down, 5 minutes went past, 10 minutes, no rounds. I was like, time, that's killed the firefight for now. Then we could focus on Dawson. Dawson actually started to come round. I was like, because I thought he was dead. Like, I just like my best, one of my best mates is dead. Started to have a little bit of a conversation. He was coming in and out of consciousness, and he was like, what's going on? And I was just like, mate, you just fell off the building, bro. We're like, sound and that. And I remember him turning, and he put his finger straight in his fucking head, bro. Because if he was looking, he was like, I'm bleeding. He's like, his finger just disappeared in his head, bro. I was like, yo, bro, bloody grab his finger and that. I was tempted to lick it, but I was like, mate, you literally just fell off the building, bro. You just need to go back to Bastion and get some like fucking some food, water, and just chill out. And that's last we heard of it, bro. He went back to Bastion. Then our attention was getting out because we were running out of bombs, bullets, and food. We're very low on ammunition, so we were just like, right, we need to get out early doors. Had to wait the night. I think we got up about 4, left at about 4:30, and we literally just made a beeline for one of the bases, and we literally just left the right of us, mate, just Taliban popping up, bam, bam, bam. And I just remember seeing like John Outward pinging them like with a sharpshooter, just bam down. We were just shooting UGLs, trying to kill as many as possible if they were coming out of any direction. Luckily, we got back to one of our bases. But even on the way back, one of my good mates got blown up. We were coming back into base. You kind of have that feeling of like, oh, fucking hell, we can see base, we're sound. You're like, your walls go down, you come quite complacent. We're all in a straight line. I'm the second man in, my mate's at the back, the GMP, and literally all you hear is like that, and an ID went off, blew him up. I literally fucking turned around, bro. You got like these clips on your day sacks and stuff. I just ran, got my rifle, bam, bam, clicked all my gear off. First on the scene, seen him, his leg was literally just like hanging, like off, grabbed his leg, got the tourniquet, grabbed his leg, put the tourniquet on it, got the other people out, trying to look for any positions. I think it was just a dicker. They've obviously pulled a cord or something. The medic got blew up as well. I was trying to treat both of them. People were just like fucking up their ass. Literally put the tourniquet around him. Then the merc come in, got him, sent him away and the medic. He survived, his legs full in contact. And luckily enough, the medic said like to him, like if he didn't put that tourniquet on where it needed to be put on, you would have lost your leg. So I'm grateful for the training we got in the military, because like it was blown up here, and there was literally like about 5 inches, I think. And you're only really around like 3 inches. So if I fucked it off there and just put it there, he would have lost the bottom half of his leg. So putting it on there gave enough blood supply to keep his leg intact. They did amazing surgery, but he has got a fucking massive scar of a dick. It's got a proper dick, bro. But they had to do a skin graft, so he had to take a skin graft from his shitty tribal, and now he's got it on his leg. So he's got like a tribal tattoo of a dick. But
I'm sure he'd rather that than 100%.
Losing a leg. No, I'd rather lose the leg, bro, because you get a payout. It's all about the money, bro.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, coming off that, then found out a couple of days later, John Dawson was back in Headley Court and alive, man. I was just like, someone was looking down on that day. Do you know what I mean? And you come in, you do trim. Like, is your best mate tells you, you're right, you're right. Yeah, sound. That's the far as it go with mental health in the military at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much did that impact you? Because I can imagine, I don't know, because I've never been in that situation.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that had some catastrophic impact on your own mental health, people surrounding you.
Yeah.
I know something that did impact you. Yeah. And that was the blood that surrounded the sand.
Yeah. So you have been doing your research, yeah.
That's my job.
Yeah. So obviously the night before we before we left the building, we had to do a sentry on top of the building. And I just remember, like, we had to stag on at the top of the building to give overwatch. The emotions are gone. The adrenaline's gone. It's quiet. You're in your own mind where you really don't want to be on tour. And you just look and it's just like, I'm sitting on his blood. Like, it was just, the blood was like, yeah, like this table all the way around. Like, you're just there, just like, just contemplating, like, what the fuck. It was just black because it was quite dark and dimmed. It was like a dark purple. And that gave me some shit when I came back off tour. Yeah, like nightmares and night terrors and stuff. It put things in perspective to me. I'm so fucking lucky to be alive. And like that round that kept me, that I put in there from tour, that never left my side on tour. That was my lucky charm kind of thing. And obviously it is, because I'm not fucking dead, but. But yeah.
So you talked about your mental health.
Yeah.
Obviously we're going to definitely go on to that.
Yeah.
You left, didn't you?
I had to leave the military, yeah.
Tell me about that, when you left.
So I left in 2017. The day I joined was the 25th of January. But coming back off that tour, my kind of, I don't know, leaving was hard for me because I didn't want to leave. I was medically discharged, which is, I had no choice in it again. And it just, what the fuck to do, bro? Like, it was a bitter, bitter pill to swallow. I know I was a good soldier. I knew that was my destiny, and it was took away from me again. Something I loved took away from me. My family unit, military, took away from me. I was just that kid again, bro. And that's when I come back off tour, it hurt me again. Because when I come back off tour, I was on the coaches from Bryce Norton coming to camp, coming around the corner, everyone's family's there, friends. No one, bro, like, no one to greet me. No dad there, no mum, no family. Literally just fucking the fact, like a build-up of like, fuck, I don't want to get off this coach. It's embarrassing. Like, I've got no one here. My mates were all there, like, oh, come back to our house. You come with our family. I was like, no, I'm good. I just went back to my room, bro. And just remember, just looking on the dust of my boots and just like, I'm fucked. Like, that mentality, my instant thing was, I need to get on drugs. I need something to fucking replicate that fucking dopamine hit. I need something. How can I just end up drinking and it spiraled over years, and yeah, end up getting diagnosed with PTSD, which is a career killer. I tried to put it off for years. Drinking's a big thing in the army, so you can push your mental health under the radar when you're in the military, because it needs to be aggressive. Drinking's part of the military. Like, on a Wednesday afternoon, a sports afternoon, was you going to the bar getting drunk and fighting. That's what it was. But that's where it started to deteriorate. Probably 2013 was a massive dip in my mental health, yeah.
What happened?
Broke. Fucking. Yeah. I can't even remember some parts of it. Luckily enough, I used to write stuff down now and again, because the amount of fucking medication they put me on to try and suppress my suicidal thoughts, psychotic thoughts. I can't remember some of it, bro. It's about 2 years of my life. I just can't remember. Like, it was always classed as anger. So I had quite a big freaking criminal record. I've got like 8. That's all spent now, but I never had criminal convictions before I was in the military. They were in the military. I'm not blaming the military, but I was very aggressive. I didn't know how to, do you know what I mean? I got AB. Yeah, channel it. Like, I love the fucking, I still do. Do you know what I mean? That's why I do boxing and I want to do other stuff. Mm. Like, at ABH, GBH, this and that. I nearly got sent down and stuff. And I just didn't know how to channel that anger, that hurt, that pain. And the biggest thing with me was the loss of sleep, bro. I was like, that was sending me fucking doolally. Like, I'd go into like rigor mortis. So when I was like, these bad episodes, when I'd have these night terrors, I was so afraid to go to sleep. I was like, fuck. So I'd try anything to try to go to sleep. I'd wait 24 hours, stay up 24 hours so I could fucking just, oh, go. People would drag me into my sleep. I'd feel people like on top of that building dragging me into the blood, like I was swallowing the blood. Like, my eyes were open and I was screaming for help, like, help, help, help. Like, I couldn't, my mouth weren't moving, but I was screaming. And I was just getting dragged into it. And this was going on, mate, fucking for years. I just couldn't tell no one. And it was just hard. Like, I still did my job to the best ability, which I'm proud of now, because I'd still get up, train the guys, do 3 PT sessions a day, go back, have a 20-minute nap, be scared as fuck, 'cause I just had a night terror, try and take some medication, and then go and take some fucking cocaine and fucking alcohol to try and suppress that side of it. So it's just a whirlwind of shit, really.
So then, it's mad, mate. When you're saying, I'm like, yep.
Yeah, definitely resonate like, with
you
it.
You can probably look at me going, yeah, you've
yeah, been yeah. There.
So when you left, you got no one to go to. What happened next?
I had to kind of start my life again, mate. Like, it was just, I don't know. It's hard, like.
Talk to me about the PTSD.
No one gives a fuck, bro. Just no one, I have to say, no one gives a fuck about your mental health. No one gives a fuck about you, your finances, or your fucking food. You have to take responsibility for it. And my first suicide attempt was a scream for help. Do you know what I mean? I got all my medication over a month. So I was taking probably 15 pills a day. So over a fucking month, 30. A lot of medication, bro. About 300 tablets. Got them all, getting drunk, because I didn't have the fucking guts to do it fucking sober. Do you know what I mean? You have to try and get the mentality of putting sad music on. I fucking hate myself. You have to do that subconscious thing where you get to that level where you don't like yourself. You don't want to even look in the mirror. I remember just looking in the mirror. I just fucking couldn't even really concentrate. Just pill after pill after pill after pill, and just fucking just, my whole room was just scattered of like broken bottles. So I used to flat pack my room, bro. I used to come into my room and just fucking hammer. People used to just leave me alone. It's just smudge. Do you know what I mean? I used to close that door, that fireproof door. No one used to come through, bro, because it's, you ain't coming in my room. And I just passed out, bro. Luckily enough, my door was on the latch, I think. Next minute, I just heard sirens. I went the next, waking up in hospital, and my stomach was just being, my stomach was pumped because all the medication and alcohol was on. My brother-in-law was there at the time. I was just like, what the fuck's going on? Like, and the doctor came over. He's like, do you know what you've done? Broke down crying, bro. I've been fucking done. Like, going through, I was just done. I can feel the emotions now. Like, it's just, I was just empty, bro. I was like, just leave me, let me go, man. Like, I just can't be arsed with this. I'm done. Like, ended up being sectioned into a mental health hospital. I was there for a little bit to try and get a plan put together to help me, like, so treatment, so therapy and medication and what would work best. And you should never take medication if you haven't got therapy. They should be at one. You should never fucking just take medication because you're only suppressing something. Yeah, it was just in and out of mental health hospitals. And I remember 2000, as much as I say, it's my sister's birthday today, who passed away. Like, I was sectioned in the mental health hospital, and my sister just went downhill again. She was alcohol, like my mum, and it was kind of no help. And like, I used to go back at weekends, and we're going off a bit off subject, but it connects to it in a bit. And she had her own mental health problems. She was just an alcoholic. And I used to go back at weekends and like spend time with her. I'd rather her drink in front of me instead of hide it, kind of thing. And it was just shit to see my sister deteriorate, because you could see the colour of her skin, like jaundice. Very skinny, big belly. You just know that's organs going fucking doolally and failing. Yeah. I could see my sister dying in front of me, and it's fuck all I can do. I can save a soldier. I can save you. I can try and help people. I just couldn't save my sister, and she was like my mum, and she was just gradually going downhill, bro. And I couldn't get out of the mental health hospital because I was sectioned. I was just like, look, if you do not allow me to leave, I will kill someone in here, or I will fucking kill myself. There's no power in this hospital to stop me. You need to give me this. So they let me on like day release. I had to call every 3 hours and stuff like that. And if I didn't, then I could be fucking took and brought back. Went to go and see my sister in hospital. She had organ failure. They had to put her into, what do they call it? A coma. Like,
yeah.
I can't remember, something like that. Like, yeah, them kind of words. To allow her body just to, de-stress. She come round finally, like we always saw me, my sisters, and I'm not really close to my brothers and sisters. Not because they're all dickheads, but they are, but just they don't really relate to me in a way, like some of them I love, but my sister came round, Kate, she was quite delusional because all the toxins in the body from my liver and kidneys and stuff like that. Got her the help, thought she was doing good. She was just straight back on it, bro. I was back in the mental health hospital. But the mad thing is, I was in that mental health hospital, bro, fucking 3 months, committing suicide twice, trying to hang myself, OD. No one rang me, bro. My family didn't ring me. Do you know what I mean? No one came up to see me. Do you know what I mean? Yet again, like, my family are failing me yet again. Like, they're supposed to be this unit, see each other at birthday meals and this and that. No one rang me, bro. Do you know what I mean? I just don't get that fucking concept. Why did no one ring me? Am I that kid again? Am I trying to scream for help? Am I trying to... I just couldn't get it. And I was just like, that was my moment in time. Fuck this. Really, that cemented me. Like my sister, even when she was coming in and out of like consciousness, when organs are failing her, when she was in the hospice, she's like, David, just keep doing what you're doing. She kept saying to me, just live your life. Like she kept saying to me, and then structure was really important to me then, especially with mental health. Mm. Wake up, fast, go to the gym every morning, go and see my sister at the hospice, come back. And I remember I was at the gym, 8 o'clock, 8:30. My stepdad rang me. He was just like, you need to come to the hospice. I could tell by his voice, like, and I was just like, sound, holding my tears back, went to the hospice, see my stepdad walk towards me, just leave me, like, seeing her there, just passed away, like. I was just like, fuck, man, like, life is shit, bro, like, it can be shit. And but it's an emotion, like, I get sad, I get angry, and, do you know what I mean? It was just, my sister was my world, she was the black sheep, I was the black sheep as well. We just had the same mentality, same upbringing, kind of did what we wanted. But it's just shit, she left 2 kids behind as well, do you know what I mean? But she was hurting as well. She didn't have an outlet for it. She was in that fucking environment, like in Coventry where she lived, it was just drugs and fucking alcohol. Everyone in the fucking corner was doing the same shit. And that's where I had to get my fucking life together. No one's going to help you. Medication's not going to help you. You've seen fucking 8 psychiatrists for fucking 6 years, David. They're not helping you, bro. Like, change your fucking mindset. There's something that needs to click. And that was my sister. They gave me that click. She gave me that kind of first step in changing my mindset, really.
That was your fuck you moment.
That was my fuck you moment, right? Yeah, 27 years old. 100%.
Yeah. And for anyone that's listening and that hasn't had that fuck you moment, what would your advice be to them?
Fucking when it comes, embrace it, bro. Mm. You need it. We're all just like energy, the same as a kettle. Like a kettle boils at a certain temperature, and when it goes off, it will just switch off.
Mm.
There's a certain point to your levels, emotionally, physically, financially, whatever. There's a moment that kettle's just going to go bam. It's either going to short circuit or it's going to boil over. You need that boil over moment, I think, in life. Like a lot of people are happy about this. Oh, you need to keep on a level. Nah, I like the fucking highs, but I also like the lows because it helps me appreciate the highs. I don't like level playing field, bro. It doesn't suit my fucking mind.
Mm. It's interesting you said that. If I gave you the option to stop all the pain now, would you stop?
You know what my answer's going to be, bro? Absolutely not, bro. There's more pain going to come my way. I embrace that shit. Like, it's only going to help me teach. Like, if I self-inflict that pain, that's a fuck up from my side. Like, I don't want that. But you can't hurt me. David Goggins, you can't. Like, you need that mentality of just not giving a fuck.
But the reason I ask that is because a lot of people would say they would, but they actually wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because they need the pain in order to grow.
100%.
But then they moan about being in pain.
Exactly.
But they want the pain, but do they really want the pain?
Yeah,
they haven't gone through enough of it.
That breaking point.
Yeah.
Same as a seed, bro. Like, you put seed in concrete, it's never going to grow. There's no substance, there's no shit.
Yeah.
You put that seed in shit, the fertilizer, it has to go through that fucking shit and grit. That's where the growth happens, is where you go through. Anyone that comes from a fucking privileged background, they do have their hardships in earth ways. But if you haven't gone through any struggles, we ain't having a conversation, bro. We ain't going to relate. I've come to that time in my life where I appreciate conversations with yourself and other people who can relate, and you inspire me with the stuff you do, bro. But if you don't inspire me, I don't need to have a conversation with you. I do not relate to you, I don't need to have a conversation. I'm not being horrible. I'll help you in any way, but my life's too short to have a meaningful, boring conversation. If you don't help me in a way, financially, if you don't help me physically, if you don't help me mentally, or if I can't help you in a way, I just can't be asked a conversation, bro.
Well, I think that's you know what you want.
Yeah.
You can add value. They can add. It's not a transactional value. I just think that's to the point. And then obviously there's a way of putting it across to people, but I think that's in my way of looking at things quite normal.
Yeah.
You know what you want. I just want to touch on the military again. Yeah. I've got a friend that's coming out in 3 weeks. What support was on offer to you, knowing that you'd gone through?
Yeah.
Obviously, you've attempted suicide.
Yeah.
You've got the PTSD.
Yeah.
What support was on offer?
Hi guys, hope you're enjoying the episode. I just want to give a quick mention to Fit for Duty. It's a company that I've recently started working with.
What's happening, mate? Ryan from Fit for Duty. Lou spoke highly about you. I know you're on the podcast today. I just wanted to drop you a message and just say, well done for everything you're doing. You're being the spokesperson for a lot of people who are to be scared to come out and talk, mate. So well done. Keep doing what you're doing. Myself, Lou, and the brand Fit for Duty, we're behind you, and I'm sure I'm going to see you soon.
Fit for Duty means something different for everyone. I'd highly recommend that you go and visit the website, take a look, or if you've got any questions, then ask me. I'll put the link in the description down below. Let's go back to the episode.
The support in the military, they could only do what they could do. The military were great at certain aspects. My battalion was shit. Do you know what I mean? I was, there's certain things I can't say because NDAs, but they were shit because they didn't have to deal with it. But the military in the whole, at the time, they did what they could do. The support was there, but like you were saying with your counsellor at the time, I think you were saying, it's you have to have a relationship with that person. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think prevented me from healing a little bit quicker, whatever, because the psychologist I was seeing, where they were here, they were writing notepads down, like there's a clock there, yeah, keep looking. You notice that shit. Don't clock watch when I'm telling you personal shit, bro. Do you know what I mean? Like, it should be close the door, off that, let's speak, safe environment. And it was just constant through that. The help is there, but you have to help yourself. Speak to your mates. Look out for charities that are doing good. Non-profit organisations are really, really good. Mind is an amazing charity. I try and do stuff for them. But also, if you're in the military, look for your regional help where they've got, there's a hub near me, and an eating base. They're amazing. They help me. I can just drop in and speak to like-minded people that have been through the military. They helped me last year, bro. I tried to kill myself last year, bro. Do you know what I mean? Not even, fucking hell, 8 months ago. Do you know what I mean? Jumped off a bridge. The M6 was closed. Do you know what I mean? I was there ready to jump a cop. I had to bring me down because I get these thoughts quite a lot. I struggle with happiness. I struggle being here.
What thoughts?
Just suicide seems a good option to me sometimes. I think it's because my emotions go up and down. My kid keep me alive. I've got a little girl called Navy. She's fucking beautiful. And story. Yeah. He's just a light in my life. And I think he kept me alive that night because the cop had seen the picture on my phone. When I left my phone in the car, it was a picture of me. I've got a picture of my daughter. And a story, and he's just like, he showed me the picture, bro, and I was like, you fucking wanker. I was ready to jump, bro. I was just like, I was trying to get in that calm state, and yeah. Then I got the help again, going through your stuff, and then I've gone through a bit of emotional counselling to do with EUPD and how I regulate my emotions. That pain has helped me grow again, going through that, standing on that bridge. I wanted to kill myself, but I'm here for a purpose, bro. Do you know what I mean? I think I have to get to that point of, I'm fucked. What can I learn from this? Right, your emotions aren't that great. How can you learn from this? Right, if you can learn from this. So I'm educating myself now. I want to be a life coach or a mindset mentor, whatever you want to do. But I want to get to the point where I can help people. I don't want to be, because I get a life coach, but I want to help people through their mental health, physical health, and be the better person they can fucking be through like struggles. Like that's helped me deal with emotions. So now I'm learning how to deal with emotions through courses and stuff like that. So I can learn about it, adapt it and teach it. Yeah.
Do you think there's an element of your vulnerability that people are taking advantage of?
People definitely take advantage of me. Yeah. Yeah. I get better at it because I do get a lot of messages, bro. Like when my social media went up a little bit, I was getting inundated messages, bro. And I am relentless. Like I will message everyone back. Like if I get some of them, 2,000 comments, every single comment, it's personal comments. Mm. It's not like cheers, mate, or thumbs up, or this or that. I will go into it like every single thing, and then they'll message me privately, and oh, I'm really fucking suicidal, this and that, right? Like what this and that, right? Do it then. I had to get to the point where it was just like, if you're that big, I'm not saying kill yourself, but you need to help yourself. And I get a lot of people reaching out to me. They don't need to help, bro. They just need attention. There's a lot of attention seekers out there with mental health. I'm coming better at it, picking up on it. But people have just lost cause in life, I think.
Purpose.
Yeah. They don't know what their purpose is. So what do they do? Quick way to get attention. I'm going to kill myself. Or post a photo to get a like and shit like that. I hate that shit. Like posting shit for gratification. Fucking hate it, bro.
How do we stop living in the past and in the future rather than the present?
Mm. That's a hard thing, though.
It's very hard.
Is it impossible, do you think?
Nothing's impossible.
Mm.
But like you was doing.
Yeah.
You was living in the moment.
Mm.
And I think when you've been to places like we have, those very, very dark places.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Yeah.
And if you can relate to that, that's true happiness.
Mm.
In my eyes.
Yeah.
Is when you can be here.
Exactly. Now, yeah. Present. Yeah. Yeah.
That's happiness for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that might seem completely fucking redundant to some.
Yeah.
What do you mean that's happiness? Well, the fact that I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm happy.
I get that.
Because I fucking weren't going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So. It's horses for courses, and happiness for other, for someone else it might not mean that for other people. But the fact I'm sitting here now, I'm happy.
It's appreciating it as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you have that appreciation for that.
You got appreciation for your past as well. Like, I think, like you're saying, being present is key, bro. Like when I'm with my kids, I'm present. You've got to be present because you're fucking up your memories in a way. Like, do you know what I mean? So if I can be present in the moment, but realizing, like, say we have like 70, 80,000 thoughts a day. And 90% of them are fucking negative, and the next day they're 90%. Mm. So 90% of your life is all about this negative fucking... If I can change it on a daily routine, is very important. And that's what the army is taught me, is daily disciplines. I have non-negotiables.
Mm.
I will train every day. I will do like cold showers or this or that or whatever you want to do just to get them dopamine hits. So I'm not seeking it from somewhere else. But if you can also delve into your past... and be aware of the thoughts that are coming through and what emotions, and bring it into the present. For instance, if I'm with my kids, sometimes I get thoughts of my past come in, negative thoughts. Like, I'm just like, no, be present, calm, be grateful. This is going to be good. Mm. You need to do this for your kids, so I'm thinking in the future kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? So you have to have that kind of a passing thought, but being present is so important, bro.
Definitely, definitely. Talk to me about what you're doing now.
What am I doing now? I don't fucking know, bro.
Well, you're obviously investing in property. You're doing cars, and you got loads of stuff going on.
I'm just trying to do whatever, anything I can to just be the better version of myself, bro. I'm trying to level up. So when I left the military, I got a bit of a payout. I've used that money to reinvest, and that's where I got into investing. Buying, selling cars, flipping cars, trying to make a 500 quid on the car here. You do two a month, that's £2,000. You got another job, that's £4,000 or £5,000. Learning what compound interest is, investing into stock markets, ISAs and all kinds of stuff like that. Buying land. I bought land in fucking Bahamas, and just random shit that I shouldn't have fucking brought. No, I don't even know why, but we'll have another conversation about that.
Fucking hell.
But yeah, it's teaching myself financial savviness. From learning from people like yourself and networking, people who inspire me. You're trying to get around people who I can inspire or they can inspire me. Like, the main thing now is property. I've been getting into it the last couple of years. I've been getting into it. My first educator was Samuel Leeds.
Okay.
Shittiest course I've ever fucking done in my life.
Yeah.
But it's one of them. I'm outspoken. Like, it's not worth the money going into, but it's that same concept. I wouldn't have got friends out of them situations who I'm in business with now. So the money was worth it doing them courses. Mm. The courses are okay, but you can learn on fucking YouTube what them courses do. But the value I've got from being around the people now, I'm part of the property circle, like Steve Hamilton, amazing guy. I've got my mates, Martin, who I'm in property with, amazing. His wife, Sarah. I need to keep my circle very tight because I find it hard to trust people. I know I can trust Steve. I know I can trust Martin. Yeah. And there's other people in this property circle that are amazing because Steve don't allow bullshit in. John, there's other property educators out there that just spill shit to get money, bro. Until you're in it, you don't realise. And then you're 10 grand out of pocket and you're just like, what the fuck have I done that for? But it's one of them. So I've got a project with Steve at the minute, my first JV. That's over near Bolton. I've learned a little bit from that. And my second JV is with Martin, which we've got a property down in Walsall. Bought it for like 425, I think about 150 grand into it. And it's just south of 750, 800. On the top end, that's a full reefer from back to brick, rear extension. But there's so much I've learned from him because he is like the property Jedi. He just knows everything because his background is building loft extensions and stuff. Even stuff like having bats on the property. We had a bat. Loads of people turned down the property because you have to get a bat survey. You have to go back every 3 months. There was like a tiny bit of shit dropping in the attic. Mm. So we can't even do the dormer. We can't do a side extension. Mm. So we had to reform it and then go to the plans and do something else and learning about the whole process and stuff like that. It's been very educational. I put like all my money into it, bro. So the back of this, I had to think to myself, what am I going to do after this? Like, this is fucking, I don't find property that sexy.
No, it's boring as fuck.
Yeah, it's boring, bro. Like, I'm glad you fucking said it.
No, it's so boring.
But it gets you where you want to go in life. I want to be free. I want my kids to be free. If my kid says to me next year, can we go to Thailand for 6 months? Yeah, I'm taking you out of school. I'll pay the fine. I can do that and educate you over there.
Yeah.
Life experience is way more. I want to get to that level where my kids are just fucking 10 times better than me.
Yeah.
And that's what I want property to do. But with property, I'm trying to find a way now at the minute. I obviously want to have some buy-to-lets just for generational wealth, but I want to get into the social system where I can help people that I've been through, the stuff that I've been through.
I've got a cracking idea for you, but
yeah,
I'm not going to share it on here.
But yeah, we'll speak about it after. And I want to give kids and teenagers and even adults is someone where they can live and re-educate themselves in mindset. I want to have my stuff's called Mindset Property. I've got my own page and stuff like that. That's what I want to bring to the table. I think property is good, but there needs to be another level up where I can give something back instead of just getting properties and fucking boring. I want to try and put my heart and soul into something.
Tell me about the mindset thing.
The mindset thing took off, bro. I didn't even know it took off, bro. It just came about. An idea comes into a thought comes into a process, and the process comes the action. Mm. I was on a course called Tell the World, which is by Alistair Cunningham. He was part of Samuel Lee's, now he's his own identity.
Yeah.
You know him?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I did one of his courses. It's all about public speaking and be the best person you can in your sector.
Mm-hmm.
I did not want to fucking do that course, bro. I was tired at the end of the day. He sold me another course. I was like, fuck's sake, another fucking course. But one of the best courses I've obviously done. Went into that course and it tells you how to public speak, how to put it, your context into content and shit like that. And it gets people to do their story and stuff like that. I was like, fucking can't be asked for this. I've bottled this up for years now. I can't be asked to go back through it. He knew a little bit because he's seen like my paper, that article that was in the paper for John Dawson. And started to tell my story and just people were just fucking in tears, bro.
Yeah.
I was stone-faced like, fuck you crying at? Like, this is not it. Because I think I've suppressed it so long. People are like, yo, bro, like you've been through some shit. It's part and parcel of life. Like it's helped me grow. He was like, David, like, you need to tell your story. You need to get on social media and tell your story. If you don't, you're taking something away from someone in life. And that's where he helped me to think about life in a different perspective way, where it serve others and it will be served you. One of my first videos that I did about mental health was suicide prevention. Didn't know how the video was going to go. I just literally pressed pause. My million mentality was sit up straight and fucking just talking to the camera. Did the video and it just went fucking viral, bro. Just like millions of views, fucking got hundreds of thousands of followers, and it stemmed from there. But that video cemented that I needed to do it, because one of my good mates, Martin Moore, he reached out to me on Facebook. He sent me a message, a very over happily polite. It's like, this ain't right, this ain't you, bro, like, something's up. Because he's ex-military, I knew him very well because he was in the same regiment as me. This guy was a soldier, bro, like multiple tours, 8, 9 tours, CP, like, guy, I looked up to him, bro, like, he was badass. I was like, give me your number, bro, like, I haven't spoke to you for a while. I spoke, got the phone to him, just fucking had a general conversation, like, right now, kind of broke down to me, and was just like, bro, like, I tried to kill myself the other week. I was like, why are you doing that? Like, he said, I'm just not happy. Like, I ended up, I think he said he rang his mum to tell his daughter, like, bye, in a way, in a way. He said he put his phone down, all his medication there, was about to do it, and madly Instagram just popped up, and it was just a video of me talking about suicide. And he said he just fucking broke down, bro. He was just like, threw the medication away. He said, I just want to bring him to say thank you. Like, your video came at the right point. Ever since then, I was just relentless with my videos, bro. I was like, I need to do this. This is surely my purpose. Like, my pain has turned into my purpose. Every struggle that I've gone through has turned into my strength. So if I can help people, on a one-to-one, I can help you. But then on a mass audience, if I can get that message just out, trying to hit the algorithm, I was just relentless every day, bro. And it's mentally fucking draining, talking about mental health and mindset. Mm-hmm. I've got nearly fucking 400 videos, bro. 400 or 500 videos of all different subjects about mental health. I didn't realise fucking the mind was that complicated until I went into it. Do you know what I mean? Learning about different things. But then people, I was learning about that and some viral videos and helping people and being compassionate and having empathy, not sympathy, and just learning about myself to help other people just have a voice. People want to be listened to. It's the most powerful thing. If you can listen, so many people have a conversation. I know you're good at it because I'm picking up on it. You allow people to speak. You don't butt in. You don't wait for your turn for your opinion. Do you know what I mean? A conversation is, let them speak. You take that in. Oh, yeah, about this and that. Like, people are so, yeah, but what about me? What about me kind of thing? Do you know what I mean? I think I'm a good listener. I fucking hope I'm anyway. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And obviously, as it's helped a lot of people giving off on social media, the responses that you've got. Yeah. And obviously, your friend there. What would you say your, because there's a lot of dangers on social media, which we'll just touch on briefly.
Yeah.
What would you say that your triggers are? Because I think it's important for people to recognise.
Triggers. Someone's being late. I don't, stuff like that, people being late, I fucking hate.
Mm.
If you're on time, you're late. It's one thing that happens from the military. My triggers around mental health. Is that what you, mean?
Yeah.
Triggers around mental health. That's a good question, you know, bro. I think it's self-sabotage with me. Like, it's what I let things get too far sometimes. I'm just trying to think, bro. There's so many, but I think it's one of me, anger. Anger really hits me as a trigger. If people are around me that are angry, I struggle with it. I don't know if it's my ADHD, but loud noises and triggers like that just spark me. I get like a vibration through my body, bro. Like, it's weird. Like, I just, whether that stems from my childhood of, like, because it does. Like, as soon as I hear like something, like a loud bang, this and that, bam, my mum's getting beaten up, or fucking hell, like, I'm getting battered, or I'm being pushed into a corner. I get that like gripping feeling where I get sweat. I think it's anger and unnecessary bullshit where people don't know how to channel that anger. Like, who, for instance, road rage, one of them, they're not really angry at me. That's one thing I've struggled with is road rage. I get out of motorways, bro. Like, I'll stop on a roundabout, put my car on a hairpin, get you out the car, bro. Like, what are you doing? Like, I've been that, got people with a throat and stuff, which is not good. I've switched that around now. I still get out of my car, but I walk up, like, bro, what's going on? What's going on today, bro? They don't know how to take it, which is mad, which is helping me grow. I'm just like, what's going on with you today, bro? It's just like, I'm not having a good day. Yeah, you don't need to drive that up, bro. If you've got a problem, search for me. Mindset soldier. Get back in my car. I try and switch it round. Oh, yeah. Do you relate to that, yeah? Because I see you laughing.
Yeah, slightly, mate, slightly. Yeah, 100% actually.
Come on then, tell me something.
Exactly that, exactly that. But yeah, it's strange. Pretty much on everything you said. So how do we change our mindset?
Changing your mindset is your daily habits.
Yeah.
Is what you do on a daily habit is so important. Like, if you eat cereal every day, you're going to have that dopamine hit of sugar in the morning. Change what you intake physically, mentally, and psychologically. So in the morning, do not get on your fucking phone. You're going to get a shit email. You're going to get a fucking shitty message off someone. Work on your inner space, self-awareness. Tell yourself you are going to have a great day and stuff like that is so important. What you eat is so important as well, what you digest. Because like 80% of your serotonin levels come from your stomach. If your stomach ain't happy, your brain ain't happy. But when you're a child, you have like two cells. And when you start to become a baby, male or female, they minute. Then you've got your gut brain and your mental brain. They are together as one. So if this isn't happy, that's why I always try and go with my intentions is, if my gut isn't happy, I feel a bit off, like, yeah, something came right here. 99 times out of 10, something's not right. So I listen to my gut. So what I intake, like I fast 18, 20 hours a day. My first meal is all around about gut health. So I have like sauerkraut, all kinds of stuff like that. I love like avocados. I have like kind of fatty proteins and stuff. So my gut's happy. Then my next meal will be something else. And then through the day, make sure you train every day, whether it's a stretch, run, walk, weight train, but make sure you fatigue yourself. I don't like the mentality of, I'll just go for a brisk 20-minute walk. Nah, you need to have that mentality of working fucking hard, getting that blood up where you're fucked and you don't want to do anything else. I think that's the mentality. And what you digest, like read books. I've never been a reader. I don't know if you have, like fucking...
I struggle to read. I struggle to concentrate for long periods of time on something that... So reading, for example, unless I'm really engrossed in it.
Yeah.
The first book I ever read was that Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Great book,
everyone has read that now. Apart from that, I've never really read a book.
The best book I've read is obviously The Secret. You've read that or?
I haven't read it, no.
That changed my life, bro. That generally changed my life about laws of attraction and how what energy you put into the world, you get back out. That helped me through a time where a friend fought me over with a lot of money, where I wanted to kill him. I was close to killing him.
Right.
I had that plan in my head, bro. Like, I was like, yo, bro, like, it was a lot of money I invested into his company. Then I seen how the friendship, I knew the kid for 20 years. 2 months later, oh, the company's gone bust. You still owe me 60 grand, bro, or 50 grand. No, I don't, mate. The business owes you the money, not me.
Right.
Nah, bro. Like, you're paying this money back, bro. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, getting to that mentality, and I just had to, going through COVID, I had to fucking try and think straight, like, looking for self-help books, laws of attraction, bam, changed my mind, bro. Like, I was just like, it will come back to you half the time. You just plan it out. Nothing can happen straight away, but it will come back at a certain point. So that massively helped me, like you say, just what you read. I struggle with reading.
Yeah.
I'll get to the end of the paragraph. I forgot what the fucking first sentence is.
That's the thing. So I'd prefer to listen.
Yeah.
But yeah, reading, I'm just like, what did he just fucking say? Like, literally 2 lines ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the only reason.
Sometimes the wording as well, like... Yeah. You can have the same book, but 2 narrators and you get one better than the other because you can pick up their tone of language and how they articulate it, which works for me. Like you say, I listen to audiobooks all the time. I listen to 2 podcasts on the way down, listen to yours all the time. My mate Ty, there's different people I listen to that have relatable people on.
Dean as well.
Dean's amazing,
yeah.
I love his accent as well, bro. That's where he gets it, bro. Dean's amazing. Shout out to Dean, actually.
Dean, mate, honestly, fantastic. I think you've already answered this one. How do we stop seeking pleasure and start seeking purpose?
If it gives you instant gratification, it's not your purpose. Mm. It has to have longevity. Purpose is longevity. Are you happy at night, chilling, relaxed? You're feeling your purpose. If you're not happy at night, there's something imbalanced. So you go to the chocolate drawer, get a bit of chocolate, or you do something, or you message a woman when you've got a partner, or you try and seek validation, which I've been bad for. I always try and seek that dopamine hit because I can't regulate dopamine properly because of ADHD or whatever they say. Like, so I'll seek stuff like you with weight training. Like, I've done bodybuilding comps. I'm doing now in boxing because I want to try and get into fucking bare knuckle boxing because I just like getting hit in the face and stuff like that. I want something to give me that fucking dopamine hit. Do you know what I mean? I have to seek it, but make sure it's a good way.
Mm. Does it ever? Do you ever feel tired of the constant chase?
Fucking definitely, bro.
Yeah.
Daily, I'm tired now, bro. But no one gives a fuck that you're tired.
No.
Your mind don't give you a fuck that you're tired. It might want to sleep. Your body might want to shut off. But at the end of the day, you've still got to put food on your table. So I'll sleep when I can sleep, or I'll rest when I can rest. Like.
See, I'm glad you said that. Obviously, I can resonate, but there'll be people listening going, it's too hard, it's hard work. Then you're listening to the wrong podcast.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. 100%.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And I'll lose subscribers or people listening, but really they don't ain't really your people, give a then. Shit. No.
Yeah.
And that's the message that I want to give off, is the people that we have on here, such as yourself, that they do want to go to that next level, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I come back to the point I made earlier of, curing yourself.
Yeah.
There is no cure.
No. We wouldn't need doctors if there were cures.
No.
Doctors would prescribe shit. Do you know what I mean? They prescribe medication. That's all they're good for.
Yeah. Receiving love, I think you've answered that. You struggle to receive love? Do you struggle to receive compliments?
Yeah, I don't like it, bro. It's probably why I am the way I am, a lot the way I am, because I see more judgment than love. You get it now and again, oh, bro, I love your tattoos, bro. I'm like, I see people staring at me, I'm like, the fuck are you staring at?
Yeah.
I don't realise I'm like head to toe tattooed, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
You don't rarely see it, but love, yeah, like the first time, I think the kids' love is just mad, bro.
Yeah, it's different.
That's the love that I think I've been seeking. I don't need a woman. I don't need a relationship. I don't need that. You may come into my life and help me and, I don't know. I really struggle with relationships, bro. I don't know if they have purpose in my life.
Can you see yourself getting into one?
I don't know where I am at the minute, bro. To be fair, like, I'm just more focused on my kids, their environment. My mother's kid, she's fucking amazing. Like, she's an amazing mom, amazing human being. Just working through stuff, bro. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I don't know where I am at the minute. Progression.
Yeah. Life goals as well.
Life goals.
What are your life goals now?
My main thing, like everybody probably says, is just freedom to live the life I want. I want to live the life I want through my purpose, really. My purpose may not bring me money, but I'm going to use other identities to bring that, like property, cars, my job that I do. That'll bring me the money, then I can do my purpose. It's just live the life that I want to, bro. I want to go on holiday all the time, see the world, and just help people all across the world, not just in my jurisdiction. I want my own events to do with mindset and mental health and help people that way. Do mindset mentoring, life coaching. I will be a life coach by the end of the year, and that's something that I'm going to build on and trying to push out. And just help my community, bro. Like, I'm not going to help everyone, but there will be people that can help.
So I want to ask you as well that I often think about, how often do you think about losing it all?
I really couldn't care. It's a daily thing. Like, I do, I sit in my car sometimes and I'm just like, man, what if I fucking lost everything? I didn't have any food, what if I was still homeless? What if my kids weren't here? But then you need to seek gratitude. I am happy that I'm here. Be grateful for what I've got, because more will come. I try not get into that mindset. But it comes like yourself, I know it will with yourself as well, where we're so fucking hard on ourselves, where we negatively speak, but sometimes that can be a driving force. Do you know what I mean? We speak ourselves down, like, because we want to say fuck you to us.
Mm.
Nah, we're doing it, bro. Shut the fuck up.
Mm.
Put that cap on. We're going, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes that's a positive thing, because then you can flip that and go, actually, we're going to progress forward. We'll take one step back and then go two steps forward.
Yeah.
Providing that you know how to do that, it's exactly. a powerful tool.
Yeah, putting the steps in place.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
And again, we use our life experiences in order to do that, but you don't have to, and this is important as well, we don't have to have gone through what we've gone through in order to do it.
Yeah, everyone thinks they need a story to be successful.
No.
Think of what? There's people out there that are stupidly successful that have had nothing going on in their life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just how you build yourself.
Absolutely, mate. And always the last question I do, mate, is, are you happy?
I like this question, you know, bro, because I'm not. I'm generally not happy. I'm just seeking peace. I think happiness is an emotion, and it comes and goes, and I'm constantly seeking happiness, I'm constantly seeking pleasure. I'm content. I'm peaceful at the minute. I'm happy when I'm around my kids, but I'm content, yeah.
There's one more thing, given a day. Is there anything you want to say?
My sister, yeah. Happy birthday, man, 8 years. Yeah, it's my sister's birthday today. She's just amazing, bro. Like, she was just a light of life. Every party she went to, she would always fucking smiling. She was never crying. Sometimes she was angry or pissed off, but she'd never let anyone dim her light. No matter what, people judged her if she was there. She was just... I was like, how are you happy all the fucking time? She didn't give a fuck what people think. And that's one thing I've learned from her, is just not give a fuck what people think, man. Do you know what I mean? I'll go and see her grave later. We've got a family meal tomorrow and that, but... Yeah, she's amazing, man.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, brother.
And you're going to keep helping people, mate. Yeah, David, it's been a pleasure.
And you, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother.